One of the most disturbing things about political campaigns and politicians and their careers, from my perspective, is that they listen to the polls. That they may have be prepared to take a courageous stand. They may have run for office because they believe in certain principles, but while they're running, their advisors say to them, if you want to get elected, you better not say this, or you better sound like you support that. Even if you don't, it doesn't matter. When you get elected, you can stand for your principles, but first you have to get elected. And ultimately what happens is that politicians get used to responding to the polls. And they listen to the advisors because as soon as they get elected, what's happening? They're running again for office, for the next election. And so we see time and again that politicians have compromised on their own principles because they listen to the polls. One poll in particular that was revealed about 2 months ago before the economic crisis was a poll that surprised both Republicans and conservatives. The poll showed that 4 years ago, 52% of conservative religious Americans believe that religion has a place in politics. 52%. The poll that was revealed just a few months ago showed that now only 30% of the same conservative religious voters believe that religion has a place in politics. It was shocking. Absolutely shocking. We have been so convinced that it was the religious right that would determine our political future. And the polls said that people from the religious right are themselves questioning the extent to which religion has a role in political life. That it was for the first time a minority of conservative Americans who believe that religion should impact upon politics. But the Republicans and the Democrats weren't listening to the polls. For the first time, I would have liked them to pay attention to it. No. The Republicans were convinced that in order to get elected, they had to maintain that religious right. And even when the polls came out, there was talk about church and God and prayer. What surprised me even more was that an announcement came out from the Obama campaign, for generally from the Democratic Party, that they were going to steep up their connection to the religious community in the United States because they believe now that religion plays an important part in the decision of voters in the United States. And the way in which the story was reported was, Democrats decide they are going to appeal to communities of faith. They were going to appeal to communities of faith. And of course, what it meant was that Democratic candidates should start going to church, and they should have their pictures taken in church, and they should talk about their belief and their prayers and so on. It led me, however, to a question that I still struggle with, which is, are we Jews included in the community of faith? In other words, were they talking about us? Did that mean that the Democratic nominee for president and the Republican nominee for president might actually accept an invitation to congregation there to meet, to speak and have a debate right here because actually they're reaching out to communities of faith? Do they include us? And I don't think so. I don't think that they meant Jews or Buddhists or Muslims or Shintoists or whatever as a community of faith. I think they were talking about one particular faith, Christianity. But I don't think that they think of us as a community of faith. And perhaps because we ourselves are not sure what we are. Are we a faith community? Does that define us? In those polls, were we considered a community of faith? What do you think? Faith is the code word for belief in God. Do you believe in God? Yes. Oh, you are a person of faith. If you don't believe in God or you're not sure, you're not a person of faith. Are the Jews a community of faith? Well, if that's the test, then my guess is that at least half of the citizens of the state of Israel are not Jews. Because I think that at least half of them do not believe in God, at least not the way that Christians believe in God. And I don't think the statistics are all that different here in the United States, or maybe in Jews throughout the world. In a post-Holocaust generation, our belief in God has gone topsy-turvy. We have lost the faith of Tevye and the people of his generation. When we witnessed and when we learned about the destruction of 6 million innocents of our people, and can't explain how the God of Israel let it happen. What does it mean to believe in God? Actually, most of us misunderstand that phrase. When people say, do you believe in God, they're asking the question, not do you believe in God, but do you believe that God? Do you believe that God exists? That's the question. Do you believe there is a God? But that's not what the question states, do you believe in God? The question of believing in God comes from the Hebrew phrase emunah b'shem, which actually is better translated as trust in God. Do you trust in God is the real meaning of the question, do you believe in God? Do you trust in God? Do you trust that God will answer your prayers, reward goodness, do justice, take care of the oppressed, fix the world, make the world perfect? That's what it means to believe in God. The question we really ask ourselves is, do you believe that God? Do you believe that God exists? And I think, as I say, after the Holocaust, Jews, in large numbers, not entirely, have stopped believing in God, have stopped believing that there is a force above the universe that fixes things that are broken, that brings justice and righteousness into the world, that rewards the good and punishes the evil. When we read a report in the newspaper just 2 weeks ago that the Israelis knew where Dr. Mengele was in Argentina, but realized that if they were to snatch him, that Adolf Eichmann would get away, and they had to choose between Eichmann and Mengele, they chose Eichmann, and Mengele got away. Do you believe that God fixes the world? That God rewards the good and punishes the evil? when people pray on behalf of those who are ill, as we seem to do, and somebody in the Dagadach doesn't make it, do we believe that God made a decision that this person should not recover? No. We're not Christian scientists. We believe not in the prayers, but in the doctors, in the research, in the medicine. You know the story of the three men who came back from a war, and they all had contracted some terrible disease. And leaving the physician's office, the Frenchman says, "We have been told that we have a terminal illness and that we're going to die in maybe 1 or 2 months. I'm going back to Paris and I'm going to go to my favorite restaurant and I'm going to order the finest wines and I'm going to invite all of my friends and we are going to drink and we're going to sing until my time is over." And the German soldier said, "I'm going to go to my favorite beer hall. And I'm going to invite all of my friends and we're going to sing our songs and drink our beer until my time is over." And the Jewish soldier says, "I'm going to another doctor." Because our trust is in human beings, not in God to save ourselves. Is this a religious perspective? Not in Christianity, but I think it is in Judaism. I think that this perspective goes back to the times of the sages in the Talmud, who asked the question, why did God make the world so imperfect? And their answer was, so that we could be partners with the divine to repair it. That we have been put on this earth to finish the job that God did not complete. That yes, there is to be justice in this world, but we are the ones who are to right the wrong. Yes, there is to be healing in this world, but we are the ones who are to bring about that healing. Yes, there is pain and there is suffering. Yes, there is tragedy. But we are the ones who are committed to tikkun olam. It is our job to do what others expect God to do. That's the Jewish way. We are a community of faith, but faith in the possibility of our bringing about healing and repair to this world. Abraham Joshua Heschel, one of the greatest thinkers of the 20th century, whom I had the privilege, when he was still alive, to study with him, he said, "The great problem in life is not whether to trust or have faith in God. The real challenge is, can God have faith in us?" When a young man or a young woman stands before the Torah as a bar bat mitzvah, they take a mitzvah project. They say, "I'm going to celebrate my adulthood not by wearing a white dress and saying that I now am committed to a belief or a faith in God. Not I'm putting on a tallit because this is a religious obligation that a God above wants me to be wearing." They take upon themselves a mitzvah project because they're saying, as an adult, it's my responsibility to make the world better than it was before. That's our challenge. That's our responsibility. So how do we deal with our prayers? How do we who sit in the synagogue for 3 days this year and recite words like we're going to hear in Musaf, "V'chol ma'aminim shehu"? We are a community that believes that God is good and God is just and God is kind and God is compassionate. What meaning do we give to those prayers and how do we recite them? My friends, I want to let you in on a little secret. I think that the people who wrote the prayers did not believe it either. I believe they did not believe that God is perfect and will fix all wrongs. I do not think the people who wrote the prayers believed that if they prayed to God, for when they were ill, they would get better. I do not believe that the people who wrote the prayers said that God will feed the whole world. I trust, I believe that God will make this world perfect. I trust, I believe that God will bring peace to this earth. I don't think they believed it. I think what they were doing was, they were saying that God is what makes the possibility of peace in this world. That God, what God is the possibility of bringing about salvation, of bringing about perfection. When they said those prayers, what they were doing was they were articulating what they believed was right and good. And that's what they attributed to God. Saying, Oseh shalom im ramav, hu yaseh shalom aleinu v'al kol Yisrael. May God who made peace in heavens above bring peace to the world in which we live, for us, for Israel and all humanity, was not an expectation that the day will come when God would say, Genug, stop mooching me, you bothered me enough. I've heard these prayers, I'll give it to you. Okay, don't bother me, here's peace. I don't think that anybody who wrote that prayer believed that one day God would say, here's peace. I believe what they were doing was they were articulating the values that they believed were divine. They were reminding themselves and telling their children, war and violence is wrong, peace is divine. Illness is a threat to life. Health is divine. Selfishness is evil. Compassion is divine. That the prayers that they composed to God were not describing God, but describing goodness. What they believed was right in this world. So that they would fulfill that Talmudic proverb of being partners with the Almighty in perfecting the world. And so when you sit in shul today, tomorrow, Yom Kippur, and you see prayers that you don't believe in, you're in good company. You're in the company of those who in medieval times had lives that were worse than we could ever imagine. You're in the company of people who composed prayers when they were living in ghettos, and they didn't know whether the next day they would be expelled. And there are stories and tragedies galore. Prayers like Hineni came from the hearts of people who had seen pogroms. They knew the world was broken and that God wasn't fixing it. What they wanted to do was to remember in the face of tragedy and evil, they wanted to remember each day of their lives that goodness is possible. They're articulating Anne Frank's belief that human beings are ultimately good. And that we should not succumb to hatred, to revenge, to selfishness. That it's wrong to be part of the me generation as if I am the only one that counts. That's what they were doing. Ashrei Yoshvei Beitecha, the beautiful and ancient prayer, the psalm that we say three times a day, says God will feed us all. They didn't believe it. What they were saying was that there's enough food on the planet for us all to eat. Our responsibility is to make sure that no one goes hungry. And so if we want to be inspired by this Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, if we want to call ourselves a community in faith, of faith, whether the candidates come here or not, our responsibility is to be inspired by the prayers to make this world a divine kingdom. To make this place a world in which God is willing to live in. To make the community a sacred community. Not because it has a blind belief in miracles, Not because it thinks that if enough people pray, so-and-so is going to get better. But rather because we are committed to be inspired by these prayers, to reach for perfection in our lives and in this world. And then, not only we at Ner Tamid or in synagogues around the world, but the whole world will be able to say, Good Yantif, what a great year. And that's what I wish you and me, all of us, a great year.